It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Welcome, everyone, to Behind the Braves, presented by T-Mobile, the official podcast of the Atlanta Braves. I'm Ricky Mast, Atlanta Braves digital media content manager. My co-host, Greg McMichael, director of Braves alumni relations, well, he is an extremely busy man. He's got Braves country baseball and softball. He's getting ready for Braves fantasy camp. Very busy man. So we're giving him another breather this week, but fear not, he'll be back with us here in October. In the meantime, however, we've got a really special treat for you this week, brought to you by our friends at T-Mobile. As we're recording this, it is Los Bravos night at Truist Park. It's a great annual tradition that we celebrate every year at Truist Park. The Braves take the field in their Los Bravos jerseys, and we celebrate all things Los Bravos. It's always a really fun night at the ballpark, and we've got a great guest in honor of that. Of course, you're probably familiar with him. You've seen him on post-game interviews and press conferences, either on Bally or you've heard him on 680. Franco Garcia, director of player relations for the Braves. Franco and I go way back. I mean, this is my ninth season with the Braves, and he and I have been buddies for all nine of those. I think I'm not alone in saying he's just one of our favorite people around the office. He's just a great dude. Really cool story. Lifelong, just a Braves guy from childhood and now, obviously, working with the team. Great dude. And of course, the Los Bravos brand and how Los Bravos started, Franco was a big part of that. And just thought it'd be a perfect time to have him on. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Here he is, Franco Garcia. Well, buddy, this has been a long time coming. I've wanted to do this for a while, and I think all you guys in baseball comms, I feel like y'all are like the busiest people in this organization sometimes because you guys just work nonstop. So it's taken a while for us to align everything, but I'm so happy that we've gotten it together. And of course, fans know you and love you, and they get to see your beautiful face interpreting. All right, here's my first dumb question. Is it translating or interpreting? What is the right term for me to use?
Well, first of all, thank you for that intro. You can expect the check in the mail shortly after this.
Sweet. Christmas is coming up, so every little bit helps me. Yeah.
I guess I would say more like interpreting, just because there's so many different expressions and there's so many different ways of saying things, and I try to make it as relatable, whether to the player, to the audience, as possible, just because I know there's so many things that if it was literally translated, it wouldn't make sense.
Right.
So I just try to adapt it as much as possible, so within the context, it does make sense.
It's so impressive what you do, because see, like dummies like me get on Google and just try to, like what you just said there, make this thing exactly turn into this thing, and it's just not that simple. So that's okay. Well, now I know you've already taught me something 1 minute in.
I was gonna say, I appreciate you saying that. I think I make it look a lot harder than it is. And I struggle myself, and it's one of those things where sometimes I'm focusing on the wrong thing, and then I just get hung up on, well, I want to make sure I translate this accurately, and then the rest of the message just gets lost in translation. But I appreciate it.
No, you do an amazing job. We'll get more into what you do, like your day in the life kind of stuff now, but I did want to back up from the beginning. So just again, fans have seen you, I guess, on TV. Of course, they don't get to see all you're doing all day long. There's a lot more to it than just the couple of times they see, or a couple of minutes they'll see you, like in a post game, or in the case of last night's game, in the post game press conference with Ronald and his boys, which was so awesome, by the way.
That was a wild experience for sure, and it was cool for me just because the gravity of it wasn't lost on me. It was just such a special moment, and growing up a huge Braves fan, to be so close to it, to see how excited Ronald was too, because I think he is just so in the moment and so present that sometimes I don't think he realizes the accolades and the things that he's accomplishing and how special they are, but it felt like yesterday he was actually really taking it all in.
It did. It definitely did. That moment was, and it was crazy because then 30 seconds later, Ozzie walks it off. But in that moment, I mean, I've sat in the press box up there for 9 years now and been able to witness a lot of really cool things, but that was one of those moments I was like, I just, I mean, selfishly for work, it's great. But selfishly for me, I'm like, I just saw somebody on my team, like my team, my lifelong team, do something that's never been done before in the history of this game I love. And it's one of those moments where you got to step back and say, God, this is so cool, even just to be a small little part of it or be around it, really.
No doubt. Yeah, the proximity of it alone just feels so special. And it's just like knowing that you're witnessing history, and maybe we're taking it for granted in this moment, but could be in the next 5, 10, 15, 20, however long, however many years, we could be talking about, I was right there. I was at that game. I saw him do it. I was able to stand next to him or sit next to him during the press conferences. So for me, it's, you know, I'm still kind of trying to soak it all up.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, let's back up, because let's get, so the fans, they see you and they know a little bit about what you do now, but your background. So where were you born and raised? I know you're mostly Atlanta guy, but what was early life? Where was that for you?
Early life was growing up in Guaynabo, Puerto Rico. My dad worked for IBM, so he would get transferred a lot. And we actually lived in Atlanta for a while, or they did, and then they moved back to Puerto Rico, and that's where I spent my early childhood, and then we moved back to Atlanta again. And so early childhood in Puerto Rico, and funny enough, we all grew up big Braves fans, TBS kids, yeah. Obviously. And then the fact that Javi Lopez was on the team was a big draw for us. I don't want to put my sister on blast and say say the wrong, or not be accurate in how she had it, but I'm pretty sure she either had an entire wall dedicated to him, or maybe it was like the back of her bedroom door that was just cluttered with Javi Lopez pictures. And well, hopefully I got it right. Hopefully she doesn't hear this and get mad at me.
That sounds right. Javi, I mean, I remember watching him as a kid, and he was one of my guys too. And that was 30 years ago. And Greg and I were fortunate enough to interview him on here, and I've been around him a couple times. He's just a sweetheart of a guy, such a nice dude. Also, it's unfair how good looking he was 30 years ago, but it's extremely unfair how he's still that good looking now. Like, guys like me got no shot when I see a guy like Javi out there, even though I'm happily married. But
absolutely. I mean, must be nice to just to age backwards or in reverse, right? And just get better. And it's like, what's happening?
Yeah.
And the same thing, dude, a full circle moment for me. Just obviously as an alumni, he's around and he still has a ton of connections in the clubhouse. So for him to even, after a year or so, just come up and say hello to me, I mean, I try to act cool and play it like no big deal, but it means the world to me. I mean, he was not just my hero, but our entire family's hero. So it's just like, it's a big kind of like, holy cow moment.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that, dude. It's such a part of what, like, we both get to work with this team. It's like, it's never lost on me. Like, doing this show, like, I got to interview David Justice, and that was the first athlete poster I had on my wall as a kid. And oddly enough, after I did that, we did that show with him a couple of years ago, and I just assumed that poster has got to be like long gone or something. My mom listened to the show, and she went up in the attic and was looking around a little bit. And the next time I came home to visit in Virginia after that, and my old bedroom's still there. That's where I stay when we go back up there. Hanging on the wall is that David Justice poster that she found. It's still there. I'm 40, and I go back home and I see it now, and I'm like, oh, that's crazy. So it's amazing. Okay, so enough about me. So Puerto Rico, so you come back to Atlanta. So TBS, always a Braves guy. When do you remember that first getting interested in the game, or first kind of becoming a fan of it?
I would say it was probably, I knew we were big Javi Lopez fans back when we were in Puerto Rico, but I would say it was kind of in the runs more in the late 90s, early 2000s, when I started becoming a little more invested. And be one of those things where you had to go to bed before the game was over as a kid. And then so you wake up the next morning, it's like, what's the score? Like, what happened? And, you know, unfortunately, late 90s, early 2000s, it was never at the end, it was never what you wanted it to be. And so there was always some disappointment at the end of the year. But that, I think, was one of like where I really started to start becoming a fan of the team and remembering the players apart from Javi. And then it was funny too, just because just the church that our family went to, Eddie Perez was a member there and or a parishioner there. And anyways, and so it was just, we had this kind of like grudge against Eddie for a reason, because whenever Eddie was playing, Javi wasn't playing. And so it was just like, oh, Eddie. But then, you know,
have you ever told Eddie that now?
Oh, he knows.
Oh yeah,
he knows. it's just super funny, and we always laugh about it. But I mean, just a great dude. So yeah. I owe him a lot, because he's done a lot for me, and he's always been so just welcoming welcoming and helpful and, you know, just looking out for really a lot of people down there. So
did you play baseball growing up, like Little League and that kind of stuff?
Played baseball growing up.
What was your position?
Oh man, wherever somebody was hurt, I think. In Little League, I played all around the infield, mostly third base. And then once I got to high school, they were just like, go to left field and try not to mess it up.
Yeah, that's funny. I had a similar career path, except they sent me to left field before I got to high school. I started out as a kid and I got to play first and second, and I was pretty good. And at that time, kind of athletic. And then a couple years later, they put me out in left field for the last couple innings. And I figured it was time to hang them up by the time I got to high school.
So. At least you had that feeling. I think there must have been some misunderstanding or I don't know if it was, but I went to such a small school and everyone played all the sports and all the coaches overlapped too. So a lot of the coaches that coached football would coach baseball and whatever. So I remember if it was a rare time that I did get on base, I remember our third base coach would just give me the sign of steal and I would get thrown out almost every time. And he would just be like, I thought you were fast. I was like, why did you think that? Like, what led you to believe that? It's like, you're the point guard on the basketball team. Like, I don't know if that exactly means I'm fast or good at stealing bases.
Well, thankfully you made it to the big leagues anyways. That we both did, in a sense.
We'll make it count.
We can count it. When did you first start thinking maybe I could work in sports or work in baseball or maybe even with my team, the Braves? Like, when did you kind of first have that thought?
I think maybe my sophomore or junior year in college, I was studying or majoring in sports management.
Where did you go?
Belmont Abbey College, okay. Right outside of Charlotte. And I guess I was just being encouraged by professors and my parents and family and friends just to be like, oh, just find something that you love, because I was just having a hard time narrowing down what I could envision as a career moving forward. And so I think people would just ask, like, what are you passionate about? And then the cliche sort of, oh, I'm passionate about sports. Like, well, try to narrow it down. And I just remember thinking, like, man, I think it would be really cool if I could work for the Braves. So I eventually just started really thinking about that and just letting it snowball out of control and just sort of became like, well, you know what? I think that's what I really want to do. I want to work for the Braves. And I'm not sure in what capacity, but I think if I could just be a part of that organization, that could be something that would feel very fulfilling and I would be passionate about.
So, okay, you have that idea and that thought. Then it's like, okay, this is what I want to do. Now, how do I make that happen? And you tell me if I'm wrong. I would think if the goal is like, I'm going to work for the Braves, then I tell people all the time, if they ask me, like, especially somebody coming out of school, if they're still in school asking, like, they want to work in sports or more specifically, they want to work in baseball, and they'll ask advice. And one of the things I always say is, well, just to get your foot in the door, be open to anything that's out there. And that means any position, and that could mean any location. There's a lot of people. Everybody has a different story. I mean, I know, like, we hear Ben Ingram every night on Play by Play. He does an amazing job. We've had him on here. Like, his beginnings are like an independent league team out in like Oregon, where he was calling games, but also, you know, pulling tarp and also doing this and also doing something else. And I think there's a zillion stories out there like that. So, all right, you decide, or you have this goal or this dream, I want to work for the Braves. So then how do you go about trying to make that happen?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I just got online and started researching, you know, internships, because by the time I graduated, I wasn't sure how I was going to get my foot in the door, what I wanted to do, or what I even wanted my career to be. And so I basically just saw the trainee program, and I remember I applied, and Alan Hearn, who's the vice president, one of the vice presidents here now.
He's been on this show, as a matter of fact, too.
Oh, man.
Love Hearn.
Hearn. Shout out to him, dude, because without him, I wouldn't be here. He kind of gave me my shot. But before he did, he kind of humbled me a little bit. So I applied for his trainee position, not really knowing what that meant. I just happened to apply for his. It was just circumstantial and just lucky. And so I applied for his position, and he was pretty honest with me. He's like, hey, you know, you seem like a fine enough dude, I guess, but the truth is you don't know anything about what we do. And I was like, fair. And so he told me, I can't hire you. You don't know anything about our operations, but what I can do is, would you be willing to come on as a part-time game day staff employee, learn what we do, and then give it another shot next year? So I said, why not? You know, let's give it a shot. And so Hearn gave me a shot, and basically, I think it was 2012 season. At the time, I was working as an independent contractor inspecting homes.
Really?
So my daily routine on game days when the Braves would be in town would be to wake up at around, I don't want to exaggerate and make it sound like it was 3 in the morning, but I think I would wake up like around 6 and kind of get to inspecting houses and doing what I had to do, and do that from around 6 a.m. to 2 p.m. and then drive over to Turner Field, change, and then just kind of get to work on the promotions game day staff.
Amazing. How long were you inspecting houses? Year two or?
Yeah, basically like a year and a half until I was able to get that traineeship with Ernie.
And that was paying the bills like out of school. Yeah.
Basically, yeah, just trying to be an adult, you know.
Sure.
Kind of, you graduated and I felt like I felt that pressure to have a full time job and to you know, be a contributing member of society, I guess.
Right.
I was like you said, just trying to pay the bills and stay afloat. And so I was just kind of double dipping there, trying to, I mean, those turned into some long days doing the home inspections, which it was a grind for sure. And it's kind of tedious, and you got to drive all over the state, and it's not just one place, it's a ton of houses, and the more you can do it once, the better your day is.
Yeah, that's before I landed here, I was to pay the bills, I was working at a dry cleaner. Shout out University Cleaners in Lexington, Virginia. Jay, he's a great boss, he's a good man, and he gave me a job when I needed one. But I, at the time, I had my only connection to sports at the time, work wise, was a local television station gave me a weekly sports segment that I would do on Monday mornings on their morning news show, and I got paid $0. I would wake up at like 5 in the morning, drive an hour to get to the TV studio to do my 1 5-minute segment for free, and I was doing that every week. And then I would come back and log in at the dry cleaners that I think work day started at 8 there or 8:30. And if I was late because of the TV gig, my boss Jay was cool with it, like he understood. But it's kind of the same as you, right? Like just trying to, whatever I had to do to keep my foot in the door. And that's, I love that. So you were working you were inspecting, and then you're going to do the game day stuff. So what was your game day staff role like? What did you do?
First of all, dude, I had no idea you were on that. Like that grind, that story you just told was awesome. We've known each other, what, like 9?
About 9 years now.
9 years now?
Yeah.
That's awesome, man. I had no idea.
After I turned 30. My 20s, I was just lazy. I didn't do much back then. I just hung out.
That sounds like all of us.
Had a good time, but I didn't advance my career much. So thankfully it all worked out. But so you're on the game day staff. What were some of your roles and duties that you were doing then?
Yeah, so I guess obviously I was eager to try to make an impression. So I would try to get here early and just do a lot of the setup work back at Turner Field in the plaza for if we had a not a pregame concert, but like a concert at the plaza stage or anything like that. So I've just set up the stanchion, sort of set up all the things that we needed to go on about the day. I felt like I've lost so much touch with the day-to-day operations now, but back then there was just always something happening in the plaza. So just making sure that I was basically like a setup and breakdown team member, and then distributing whether there was the playbills or if there was a giveaway that day to all of the gates around. And again, obviously we had a team of people doing that, so other guys were there too, and we were getting direction from Hearn and his trainees and everyone. So it was a full operation. And then once the gates opened, it was just about being where needed. So whether it was passing out playbills or on bobblehead days, which were super hectic, it was kind of about backfilling whatever gate needed bobbleheads at the time. Whoever was running low, you're just pulling from another gate, trying to make sure that everyone's getting an equal amount, that no one gate doesn't run out. That was always interesting. And at the time, it felt really cool to have a walkie on you, because, you know, that was one of those things where only the full-time staff members kind of had those. And so whenever it was bobblehead day, they handed you a walkie, and you're just like, okay, yeah, this is a real deal.
That's right. I'm here now. Yeah, I've arrived. Yeah. That's
and cool. So that was sort of the stuff that, like, it was fine and I didn't mind it. But, and then eventually as the game began, we got a little break, and then it led into probably one of my favorite things that I got to do as a game day staff member, which was running the tool race.
Okay. Nice. Nice. All right. So,
which I don't even know if I'm allowed to say that I did that, but I guess it's out there now. So I don't know if they try to keep it a secret as to who runs in theirs or not, but it was me for a while.
If there are people out there that think that those tools are actually just the tools in there, there's not somebody inside there, then I got nothing for them.
That is 2-bit.
That is 2-bit. Poor 2-bit. Did you ever have to run as 2-bit, or did you have a dedicated character?
So I ran as all of them at one point or the other. I think I remember when the one of the trainees that was in charge, he was just like, oh, you kind of seem tall and lanky. I think you'd probably be a good fit for the hammers. And stuff. I'm like, okay. And so I kind of, once I started doing that more regularly, I kind of, if I had a choice my preference would be to do the hammer.
Okay. Now you're doing that. Was this, you said still during game day role, or is this, so then you go to trainee after that?
It was in the game day role, but then when I transitioned over into being the trainee, then it was your job to sort of orchestrate the whole thing, plan it, get the other game day staff members who are going to be running in as well. So you're kind of more in charge of the whole operation. So that was also a cool escape, because as a trainee, obviously your responsibilities and your duties change, but that was just always a fun escape in, you know, the middle of the fourth or the fifth or whatever it was, to just be like, all right, let's go run in this tool race, because it was just such a cool. Have you run in it?
No.
It's not too late.
No, it's too late now. I'm washed now. Yeah. The cutoff for me would have been, I'm going to say around 2016 or 17. Yeah, it's too late for me.
But it was just, it was just one of those things that I never really played on a big stage anywhere. And so just being able to run out, even though I knew in my mind they weren't rooting for me, they were rooting for the tools in the race. You run out there and you consequently the crowd just goes into a roar and you can't help but feel excited about it. So it was one of those things that it never got old. It was, and then just everyone cheering and the adrenaline just got the better of you. So I can't even imagine actually being yourself or being on that stage and having to perform, because obviously two completely different things, but it was just, right. For me, it was just a cool experience in itself.
Yeah. It's still regardless of the fact that you're wearing a giant tool costume, like it's still thousands, tens of thousands of people like are looking at what you're doing. Yep. And that's I can't imagine. That's awesome.
Yeah. It was kind of like, let's just pretend it's for me for a second and then just crash back to reality.
Let's go. Okay. So how then do you go from, you know, you've got game day staff, your trainee. And for those that don't know, I think most everybody probably knows, but trainee, it's kind of another term for intern, essentially. We still have the trainee program here where everybody, departments will get however many trainees, and then those trainees are here for a year, which is, I think, a really good program. It's a good experience for a lot of people. It is a lot of people's first foot in the door, really. It's kind of like what you're talking about. So how do you go from that to then being hired on full time by the Braves? And what was that first full time role?
Yeah. The traineeship is only for 1 year, and I think back then too, the organization was just a little bit different in the sense it maybe was a little bit smaller. Just I think obviously we've grown since 2013. So I kind of had a little bit more of an opportunity to work with other departments and get to know other department heads. And long story short, I kind of established a good relationship with the department head of guest services. And at the end of the year, she had mentioned that they were expanding and they were going to add a coordinator position. And she asked if I'd be interested in applying. And I thought to myself, absolutely, you know, a chance to stay on and keep working here. So I jumped on it, and fortunately it worked out. And that was my first full-time gig, guest services coordinator.
Nice. So what did you stay in that role for a couple of years till you transitioned into the department you're in now?
Yep. Okay. I think 2014 and 15, and then
I feel like the first year I met you, you were still in guest services. And my first year was 15. So
yep. And I definitely was, because I was still in guest services back then. And in 2000, at the end of like 2015, 2016, I think it was because of the Mets and Cespedes and just kind of like the success he was having. I think MLB mandated that all the teams implement a translator to make sure that the media and the player itself can have a means to communicate with one another. And so I was approached with that opportunity, not knowing anything about it, not knowing anything about the clubhouse or the world down there. And I remember feeling kind of nervous. I was like, you know, I don't know if I want to do this, because I kind of got a good thing going. I know what I'm doing here in guest services, and I've got my coworkers who, you know, they sort of become like your family, and we have a good dynamic, and I really like everyone. And it was my boss at the time, Aaron Sheehan, who just told me, she's like, you need to probably do this, and like I know what you're saying, that you're nervous and all that, but you should go for it. It's a good opportunity, and I mean, she was right. I had no idea what I was signing up for, but I just kind of had to. I had a hard time stepping out of my comfort zone, but luckily I had the encouragement, and that's sort of how the transition happened at the beginning of 2016.
I admire what you do so much, because you make it look easy and seamless, and I can barely formulate my own words out of my own brain a lot of the day, much less hear what somebody is saying in one language and then interpret it and then be able to relay it to a bunch of cameras and microphones in a way that makes sense to them, but also retains the intent and the message of the person who you're interpreting for. So it's pretty amazing. So how did you, I mean, you took the opportunity, but how do you even, like, how do you practice for something like that?
I honestly still think this happens today, where I feel like the interview starts, I black out, and then I come to at the end of it, and I'm just like, what happened? Okay. What was said? I think I leaned on my folks a lot, where I was just like, I don't know, how do I do this? And I think my dad at the time, he's done a few things like that for whether it was meetings or personal stuff, where he would just help whoever, you know, help with the communication. And but the truth is, there was no training. I think just the fact that I was bilingual, and I think I was really given a kind of a really good opportunity. Now, it was a blessing in the sense that I kind of got to learn on the job as everything else, which I think it's not something that's, not everyone gets that opportunity to just sure. be like, hey, like, we expect you to know exactly what you're doing by the time you step in. For me, it was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. And it was very kind of upfront about that. And everyone was patient, and we went through the growing pains and we felt it out. But I was really lucky that I was afforded that opportunity to just be like, learn on the job.
Yeah. I still think, I very much appreciate, like, my boss, Greg Mize, and then our mutual friend, Victoria Klein, who's now with MLB. Like, they kind of, at the same time, you were learning what you were doing in your new role. As that exact same time, they were kind of allowing me to learn how to do what I do on the job, too. Because it took at least 2, if not 3 years until I fully felt like, okay, like, felt like I was doing an okay job at first, but it took time before I felt confident, like, okay, like, I belong here, and I can do this well. But even still, 9 years in, I'm learning every day. And that's, I learn from my coworkers, my team, like, I other people around the league, like, it never really stops, you know, trying to get better. So
no doubt, I go through waves sometimes from just like, what am I even doing? Like,
right. I feel the same thing.
Yeah. I have no idea what's going on. And then sometimes I convince myself that I don't know what I'm doing. I just know what not to do. So right. then
as long that's a big part of the battle sometimes. Yeah. Though,
just don't do that. And as long as we're not doing that, then the opposite should be in the realm of okay.
Do you remember the first live TV interview you did? And I know I'm asking, that's like maybe a needle in the haystack because you've been doing it so long and so many times now, but do you remember?
I can't say that I do, but I'm going to take a shot in the dark here, and I'm going to say it was with Adonis Garcia.
That's, in my mind, I feel like I saw you first time on the field at Turner Field, and the camera kind of pans out from Adonis and whoever the sideline person was then. I'm not sure if it was Kelsey or who, but whoever it was, it pans out, and there you were, and I went, well, I'm not going to say what I was just like, oh my God, it's Franco. Franco's on. It's like, it's happening. It's all happening. And I remember, I believe it was him. I know the first time I saw you, it was with Adonis Garcia, so I'm not sure if that was the first time in my mind it was, but I remember just as somebody who, like, kind of felt like I was your buddy, at least a little bit at that point, your friend, like, I remember how proud I was. I was like, dude, he just killed that. Like, he's just, like, just did it like an old pro. So I'm sure it was nerve-wracking at first.
Extremely nerve-wracking, and thank you for saying all that. I think the one, it was 100%, like I said earlier, where I feel like I was so nervous and I was just trying to play it cool, or at least seem like I knew what I was doing. But I think in reality, I would just kind of black out in the moment and then come to outdoors. I was like, oh no, was that okay? But in the early years, I think what was also really cool about it was I just had so many, like you said, we're friends. I had so many friends here at the Braves. And I think it was just such a cool thing to be able to experience with everyone, because I felt like everyone sort of had a similar experience. It was like, I know that goober. He was sitting 2 cubicles away from me like 20 minutes ago, and now he's right. You know, like, now we're just watching him, like, spout off on TV trying to translate for this guy. And I think we all just really sort of got a good laugh out of it, and were able to enjoy it together, and it became sort of like this thing where, I don't know, maybe you tell me, but hopefully it felt like that's Franco's one of us, you know?
Yeah, no, it's like I mean yes, there's literally a team on the field, but I feel that, like, for us here in the front office, I kind of feel like we're a team as well. Like, we're all here rooting for each other, and anybody, especially if you work with somebody and you consider them a friend in addition to a coworker, like, you root for them to do well and you want them to do well, and it makes you feel good when they do well and they succeed. And that's how we've always felt, and that's how I've always felt seeing you grow in your role over the last, God, how long, let's see, 16, so this is 8 years in this role for you, or in this that department, I guess. Is that right? Math is not good, not my strong suit.
If that math checks out, then it's right.
All right, 15 is my first year, and I've been saying this is my ninth season on year. We're yep. both okay.
It's my eighth season. You're right.
Nice, very yeah. nice. Yeah. Okay, amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And same, dude. It's great to see all of us, all the people that, you know, we sort of come up with thrive and, yeah. and succeed and excel. And I think that's back to what I was saying. I think that's what was cool about it, because I think there would have just been more distance. It wouldn't have felt so close to home if that would have been an outside hire and they came in and didn't already have that relationship with everyone in the front office, right? So I think that for me was sort of what amplified the experience. It was just so cool that it felt like everyone was just supportive and rallying around, and seeing all my friends and coworkers just get excited, and it just made me feel like no one is more keenly aware that I'm a nobody than me. But it made me feel like I was like, oh man, this is cool, and it's just cool to get everybody else hyped up with it too.
Well, you've always been the perfect person for that role, because you do the role well, the public facing part, the fans at home that all of us see on TV, press conferences, radio, all of that. You obviously do that well, but I think what people listening would be most happy to know is that behind the scenes, you are the perfect person and for this, that role, and that you're so good at building relationships with people and building trust with people. And especially, like, you're the guy that's working with our players every single day. And in addition to what they have to do on the field, the demands on them outside or off the field are a lot, especially on a good team, really, especially on a great team like this one we've got this year. I mean, the star power is unbelievable. So into that, and I do want to get into Los Bravos. We'll get into that. But I did want to ask you this first. Now, I say this knowing, as somebody that knows that there are new 2 days that are exactly alike in this job. I actually, a bunch of us in marketing were speaking to a UGA marketing class that came here last night. And I told them, you know, no 2 days are alike. But the best way I can describe my job is I'm going to run you through what my Tuesday was, because this was Wednesday yesterday. So let me just take you through the day yesterday, because it kind of hits on a little bit of everything. And then I rambled for about 20 minutes very fast. And at the end, I went, and so that's Tuesday. And they all got a good laugh out of it. But the point was, here's what we planned the day to be. And then here's what actually happened. So no 2 days are alike. But what is sort of a typical day like for you and your role?
Yeah. Like you said, no 2 days are alike. At home, I usually just try to get in and sort of get to work on our game notes, which obviously you're in the press box, so you read them. And it's a team of us that work on it. And, you know, I've got my little section, and kudos to everybody else who's writing the game notes, because I feel like they're really, really good at writing them. And I feel like I just try to match them or keep up with them, because it is not easy. It's one of those things where, again, I was kind of afforded the opportunity to learn on the job, right? And I guess really thanks to Jared Burleson and Jonathan Kerber, because they both took the time to, in all honesty, teach me how to write. I just couldn't write. And I didn't know, there were just even very simple things as far as structure that I didn't understand. Now I'm going off on this tangent that didn't need to happen. But anyways.
No. And for those listening, like, game notes, I know you probably hear that on a broadcast or whatever, but the game notes, literally every day, Franco and the staff, the baseball comm staff, they put together for every single game notes, and they're both digital, but then they print them out every day. And it is on those long sheets of, like, legal paper, is I guess the mm-hmm. long sheets mm-hmm. of paper. And it is multiple pages, friends reference, front and back, stapled together, and the amount of information that is in these game notes and that they produce every single day will blow your friggin' mind, because it's everything team related, any number you can possibly think of, and then also, like, blurbs and information on every single player on the roster, the opponent the Braves are facing, any pertinent information that anybody could possibly want to look up for that night's game is assembled in these game notes, and they do it every single day. So just for the fans at home to understand fully what the game notes are, and then those are available for press, broadcasters, and everybody to use for whatever their job is that they're doing. But go ahead.
No, I'm glad you said it, because I could not have said it better. Yeah, so I'll just try to get my portion done, which now, admittedly, I'm usually the last one to be done out of everybody, so sorry to the guys. And then the rest of the day, just sort of fielding requests for all the players or coaches or whatever it is, whether it's, you know, any internal requests for an appearance or a video or whatever it is, to any media requests that we have. And so just sort of communicating with whoever I need to, and then sort of lining it up with the players, and, you know, just kind of checking through all the proper channels to make sure what is possible, what isn't possible, all that kind of stuff. And then just about executing it when the time comes. And then typically, you know, we'll open up the clubhouse and just be available there as well in case anyone needs anything in particular with any of the players, or if anyone needs anything from one of the Latin guys and they need some help communicating with them. And then, you know, shut the clubhouse down, do the BP thing, more or less still be available, and just kind of get to the game, and then just go up to the press box and watch the game. Again, sort of, it's about being helpful if you can in any aspect, and that's sort of the day. And then just the post game, I'm having a hard time getting specific with it because it just feels so routine for me.
Right. No, I mean, you just laid it all out perfectly, though. I mean, you kind of, like, you run through it quickly. If you're listening to this and you think about it, every single media outlet that could possibly want to talk to a player, interview a player, has a request, or even beyond media, like, even for me, like, I work in Braves marketing, like, we have a video idea, or I reach out to you, say, hey, Franco, like, behind the Braves next week, can I have somebody that's on the team? Can I have a bullpen guy? Whatever. Like, you and the crew, you guys are all, you're handling all of these requests. And again, it kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier. There's always going to be a lot of those for any professional sports team. For one that's really good, really prominent, and considered a contender that a lot of people are interested in nationally, that's a lot. That's a whole lot. That is, I mean, you think about, just think about wherever you're listening to this from, think about how many local news stations your town or city has. If your city has, like here in Atlanta, I don't even know how many we have. And then you start going to the national ones, and then you start thinking, oh, that's just TV. What about the radio stations as well? And then newspapers, other publications. It's a ton. So Franco is modest and humble as he always is, but it's a lot that he's fielding every day, and he's not dealing with it, but handling it all, and with the players.
For sure, and it's a team effort with everyone in the baseball comms side as well. But it's just one of those things where, again, I kind of was given an opportunity that is super rare because I don't have a communications background. I didn't come up in the media relations world up until I got this job. So the fact that I was able to learn on the job, it isn't lost on me how unique and special that was, and what a rare privilege it was. Just because usually most of the people who get these jobs have went to school for it, studied it, and sort of paid their dues, whether it was in the minor leagues or just in agencies or whatever it was, and before they get their chance to do it here. And so the fact that I was allotted that opportunity and given the chance to do it here without really knowing and just sort of learning on the job, it was awesome. And then it's like you said, there's a lot of other parts too. There's moving parts where it's awesome when I'm really lucky that you guys are so inclusive, and, you know, you'll call me up for a meeting and be like, hey, we wanted to see what you thought about this idea or whatever. And I just feel, again, privileged and special that to be included in that. And I think that goes back to sort of like the environment, the culture we have here, and sort of the relationships we've all established with one another, that we kind of have that rapport to just be like, hey, you know what, let's get in a room together and just talk this out. Yeah. And so that's one of the cooler parts of the day, whenever those days do happen.
So one thing that I'm always mindful of when I request a player's time from you for this or some project I'm working on, I always try to make sure that whatever amount of time I've requested, that I get done with them in under that time. Today, I have very much failed you in that effort because I've kept you way longer than I intended to, and I'm sorry.
No, that's my fault. I've been rambling, and then I catch myself rambling, and I'm like,
stop rambling. I'm sitting here enjoying talking to you so much that I've just stopped even looking at the clock. So that means it's a good show.
Don't look at the clock.
You're right.
Forget the clock.
Okay. Well, I tell you what, we'll get to the last question then so that you can go on about your day. And I can stop bugging you.
Not at all. Because obviously I've enjoyed it too. I've kept talking. I haven't looked at the clock once. I'm having a great time. So
good. Los Bravos. So obviously I'm talking to you today it's Los Bravos night tonight at the ballpark. It's been a fun newer annual tradition. We've been doing it for a few years now, but it's still kind of in my mind. It's still one of our newer traditions. And I remember back when Los Bravos first became like a thing, and that became an idea, and we wanted to launch that as it's its own brand. I feel like it's even more than that. I feel like it's bigger than that. It's more than just the branding of it. It's, you know, Eugene Brooks, our diversity director, always talks about the biggest thing is offering everybody a seat at the table, reaching out,
right,
just simply as simple as reaching out, and maybe, you know, just offering that chance or opportunity. So when we first started or had the idea, like, okay, we're going to launch Los Bravos. You had a part in that, in that we launched the social media part of it. Was a very early component of it. Was, I think, Los Bravos Twitter account was like very, now X account, very early on. And you were the person running that account at the beginning, if I remember correctly.
Well, thanks to y'all, really, because I mean, that was another thing where I would not have had that opportunity had it not been for y'all being so inclusive and just being like, hey, what do you think about doing this with us? And really, credit to you, because I kind of have forgotten about this chapter in our history, but you coached me through that entire season of just like, hey, this is sort of how you want to react in these situations. This is sort of what the content you're looking for. This is, you know, what you do in these situations. And I had zero social media background or experience or any marketing experience or anything like that. So to be able to go through that with you and with y'all on the team, I mean, for me, it was just something special, because obviously it was something close to me that I felt just proud to be a part of. And it was cool in that sense to give Los Bravos a voice. And if I could help contribute in that in any way, it just felt like a step in the right direction. And the only way I can say it is I just feel grateful that, you know, y'all included me in that and you gave me that opportunity to have that experience and have that growth. And I learned so much from that year. And it was just, again, I don't know. I feel grateful that sometimes I forget that we did that for that entire season or even longer. I think that might've gone into like 2017, maybe even to 18. And
it went a while.
It grew so much. And I remember it was just time to kind of like pass it on and let someone dedicate more time to it. But
yeah,
it was special.
That's why I wanted to have you for like, especially on Los Bravos night, because you were part of that, like getting it off the ground and getting it started, and now to see what it's grown into and to see the players go on the field wearing Los Bravos jerseys is the coolest. I mean, it's just awesome. And to see the flags and like on social media tonight, like everything's going to be all Los Bravos themed, even on like on Braves channels. And it's just a fun night for everybody. So I wanted to make sure people listening, like, they know they see you now and a lot of like get to see a little bit of what you do now, but to know that you were a big part of that, getting that started. Let it be known that Franco helped get Los Bravos started.
Let it be known that it was thanks to you and Greg and, you know, all the folks over there in the marketing team just, you know, kind of gave me that opportunity. And you know, it was really nice just because it felt like whatever I was thinking, y'all valued it. So
yeah,
it was just a really cool experience. And I remember back when just even seeing the Los Bravos jersey felt like a pipe dream, right? We're like, oh man, there's no way we'll ever get this off. And then we've been doing it for years, and it's super cool.
It's awesome, man. Well, all right. Well, Franco, I've kept you way longer than I meant to, but thank you so much for your time. And yeah, I appreciate it. And I look forward, I'm just putting it out in the universe, I don't want to jinx anything, but I want to see you translating at the World Series celebration, on the buses, in the parade. I want all of that again. I'm not jinxing it. I'm just going to keep saying it. This year, next year, every year that they allow me to work here, I'm going to keep saying it.
I love it. No, we're not superstitious. You know, we're not jinxing it. So no. Let's manifest it.
Let's do it.
And Ricky, thanks so much for having me, man. This was awesome. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy.
All right.